If you missed our interview with J.J. Watt, we'll have it for you coming up at 9 o'clock this morning. Sean Pendergast has posed this question on the Triple Threat. Could Watt winning Defensive Player of the Year make his comeback from all the surgeries and the injuries as great as Tiger's comeback, culminating in winning the Masters?
I think it would actually be more impressive, but at the same time, it wouldn't receive nearly the same amount of fanfare. And I get it, and I understand why. Like, there's so much more wrapped into it just in the athletic side of the accomplishment. With Tiger, it was that his wife had attacked him for good reason with a golf club. He'd had various run-ins since then. His body was falling apart. He had the DUI just 2 years ago. He looks like he's aged 40 years in the last 10 years. Like, there's a whole lot more to Tiger's story. And then the fact that it is an individual sport and it is golf, and Tiger was the person that basically drove the golf industry for the first decade of this century. It would... JJ winning the MVP would not be made nearly as big a deal, but I think the challenge and the likelihood of it was even more because he'd be the best defensive player in the league versus, you know, Tiger won one Masters. He's not the best golfer in golf right now. Am I making too fine a distinction there?
Not necessarily.
I think the actual feat would be more impressive, but the amount of attention it would get would rightfully be less.
It would not receive the same attention as Tiger, yeah, because Tiger is... I mean, Tiger is one of the probably 10 most legendary athletes of the last 100 years.
And he's a cultural icon.
Yes.
Like, he changed the sport of golf.
He's a global major star.
Like, JJ hasn't changed the sport of football. He didn't make football way more popular than it already was.
Yes, you know, because it's impossible.
Right. Tiger drove the golf industry. 5% of people in, like, 2005 said that golf was their favorite sport to watch on television. It's at less than 1% right now. And that's all Tiger Woods.
The comeback already happened, right?
With JJ? No, because he's not the defensive MVP yet.
But he had 16 sacks.
It was a different variety of 16 sacks than when he's had like 16 to 20 sacks before. And also, he wasn't the defensive MVP. Like, he wasn't. It's different. He hasn't regained the form.
But what was he like? He was like the fourth runner up, probably.
Yeah.
It's already
super impressive. Okay, you're saying that basically. JJ getting 16 sacks is on par with Tiger winning one major. I'm with you there. I'm okay with you there.
I'm not even sure I'm quite going there. The whole thing with Tiger Woods, like, it's just not happening. So let's throw that out. You can't have something on the same level as
happening?
Tiger Woods.
Because
like
it's such a big story.
Right.
Oh, okay.
with Tiger Woods. But I feel like, all right, well, I mean, he's already done something pretty significant. Like, there's not really a next step of the comeback, you know? It's like he's back to his elite play.
But he's not his defensive MVP. Like, it truly, like, 100% back to where he was.
I get that, but I mean, we're talking like one player, and unfortunately, Aaron Donald exists. It's not like there's essentially a void at the top. Like, there was a void at the top of golf.
But I think that the people who break down the film and all that would tell you, and the defensive player of the year voting backs it up, that right now you've got at least two guys who are like the class of defensive players in the league. Aaron Donald and Khalil Mack. Like, those are clearly the two best defensive players in the NFL right now. And to complete the comeback, and I don't know if he can do this, you know, can JJ get back to being at that level?
But
that I don't know.
Look, Aaron Donald and Khalil Mack and all those guys are younger and haven't had the injury history that JJ has had.
Yes.
So, like, that makes it really unlikely that JJ is ever going to be, like, the same, just incredibly, like, down in, down out, like, he is just completely marauding a team's offense. That would be a huge step for him to take that this year, and it's possible. I think there's a really good chance he's even better this year than he was last year. But just to look at, to jump off of Paul's point, I think I'm agreeing with you here, Paul. I mean, JJ was the second leading sacker in the NFL last year.
Yes.
Like, it's ridiculous, and it's kind of weird that that's gotten not all that much fanfare. And I don't know if it's JJ fatigue, you know, where people just kind of got tired of talking about JJ so much. If it weren't for Aaron Donald, JJ Watt would have led the league in sacks last year. Like, that's astounding. That's not something
I ever...
He was
the quietest 16 sacks ever.
You know how dumb it would have been to predict that last August? It would have been the dumbest prediction ever. And yet he did it, and it kind of went under the radar. It might be the first time in JJ's professional career that people didn't really bring it up too much.
They're like, he's back, and he is less cheesy than he used to be.
And other,
all right.
And other than the Giants game where he had three sacks, it was pretty consistent production. It's not like he had it's not like he had a bunch of games where he tallied up a lot of sacks. It was pretty consistent, you know, going from week 1 to week 17. You're right. I mean, yeah, if you had predicted in August that he would have been second in the NFL in sacks, you would have been viewed as crazy.
Here's a text from Chad, 713-572-4610. When JJ was in his prime, it wasn't just sacks.
Right.
It was batted passes, tackles in the backfield, plays on offense. That is why he is not 100% back yet.
Yep.
And MVP. But he's close. I mean, we're not seeing the quite same thing with the deflected passes, but the tackles for a loss and the impact plays, are those completely gone by the wayside?
What about the fact that they almost exclusively rush him against right tackles versus left tackles, and they don't rush him inside much anymore?
You know, you could go two ways with that, because they used to move him around all over the place, and he used to go against a lot of the weaker offensive linemen. And that made it easier to get stats. Now he's kind of more predictable where he's going to be. Part of that he's got Jadeveon Clowney on the other side. So it's they don't have to do as many things to get him isolated. But I think that some of the production that he had when he was in his prime and when he would play on the inside more was because they would – if your team had a backup offensive lineman starting, that poor little SOB was going to have to deal with J.J. Watt all day long. And they don't quite do that anymore. So, I mean, you could make an argument that – that's where the stats don't quite tell the whole picture. I would agree with Chad, the listener, in that the down-in, down-out impact, including with tackles for a loss, all that, it's not quite the same as when he was at his peak. So there is more ground to gain, and I think he might actually get that this year. Oh, go ahead, Mike.
Here's the bottom line. Watt, during his first 5 years, the first 5 or 6 years, were as great as any defensive player has ever played in the history of the NFL. So to Paul's original point in the segment, you know, trying to get back to that part, like what, how do you complete the comeback? You complete the comeback by getting back to that point, but that point is so unbelievably great that if I were to say right now, and I will tell you, I don't think JJ is going to get back to that level. That sounds harsh and critical, but it's really not at all.
Well, to call it a comeback, then that's unrealistic. Like, he's already come back.
Oh, he has absolutely come back. Absolutely, he has absolutely come back. Yes.
The interesting thing with the stats, if you just go by like Pro Football Focus stats, a lot of the, I mean, his 2012, he had 80 of them compared to last year, he had 51. But if you still look at some of those defensive MVP years, he had 67, 61, 59. It's like he's just below where he was when he was at really his all-time peak. So, like, let's say he's 5/6 of what he was, which, you know, doing the math in
five,
my head.
5/6.
What is 5/6? Is that, like, 85%?
You're the math guy on
I'm
the show.
I'm guessing that's 85%. I mean,
it's not quite 85%. I want to say it is, like, 82.5.
So all you
something.
Guys, I'm not even
it's
thinking.
It's 83.3%.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we split the difference. Paul and I were right. Yeah.
Mike, Seth, and Paul on a Tuesday. You'll
math
hear
guys.
Our full interview
so
with
he's
83, JJ Watt.
Well, let's say if he's 83% of what he was,
That's pretty
That's
good.
That's a B.
I feel like he's closer to... Is he 90% of what he was?
I would go with...
I'd say he's closer to
90%. Well, he has to be. I mean, he had 16 sacks. Like
I know, but it's not just sacks.
It's
like,
not
it's the
just
same
that.
Thing. Like, the reason that Jadeveon's better than just his sacks, like, and I would say, I would argue that Jadeveon's better than his sack total would imply. I think in some ways, JJ right now isn't as impactful as like other times in his career when he got 16 sacks. Like, the sacks are paint a little rosier picture of where he is as a football player.
Yeah, man, but like percentages, man, are just a figment of your imagination too, man.
Mad Radio on a Tuesday. You'll hear the full Watt interview that we have done this morning coming up at 9 o'clock. Time now for Mad Takes. Russell Wilson, the new highest paid player in the NFL. He signed his contract a week ago, 4 years, $140 million. He's giving his offensive linemen Amazon stock, $12,000 each in Amazon stock. Seth, what is the best gift a quarterback has ever given in your time in the NFL?
The best thing I saw was Mark Brunell got his offensive linemen some really, really nice hunting rifles. So you walked in on Christmas Day and there was like all along the offensive line bank, like some really super bad hunting rifles all lined up. That wouldn't happen in today's NFL.
That would not happen
that was,
now.
That would 100%. That'd be like Mark
Is Mark
Brunell,
Brunell trying to lead a revolution?
Mark Brunell suspended for being nice to his offensive linemen.
Yeah, now he'd be Jarvis Crittenden in that arena situation.
That one was interesting to me because I would imagine at least a couple of guys didn't hunt. So I don't know what they're gonna do with their hunting rifles.
Sell the fence.
Like, what's it? Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Like, some of them might not have wanted it, and then you're stuck in the position of like, okay, I don't wanna if I re-gifted somebody, it would be a really nice gift, but I also don't want Brunell to know that I re-gifted his gift. I'm going to have to, like, display this thing above my mantle or
something.
That's
a good point. That is a good point. That's a tough thing to
regift. Brunel would be cool with. You know what I would do? If I didn't hunt, and which I, look, God, I haven't fired my rifle in a long time. That's not a sexual innuendo thing, Mike. I saw the look in your eyes.
No, not
everything's
at all.
Just fine in that department.
Everything okay back home?
So, no, but like, let's say your quarterback gives you a hunting rifle, but you don't hunt. I think the quarterback would totally understand if you're like, yeah, but my uncle's a big time hunter, so I let him keep it.
That's
for
an
me
acceptable
he uses
re-gift.
It all the time.
But yeah. If someone got me one of those, I mean, I would go to the shooting range all the time. I went to a shooting range once with my cousin in Texas City, fired a bolt action rifle, actually was within like 2 inches of the original target that I was trying to hit at 100 yards on my first shot, and I was very pumped about that. So if someone were to give me one of those, I would find ways to use it. Like, not violent ones, of course, but, you know, I'd use it.
There's something about this Russell Wilson giving
find
his offensive lineman a specific stock that rubs me the wrong way. It's like one of those classic Russell Wilson things where you're like, he's doing something really nice, but somehow it rankles me.
It's really nerdy.
It's almost like, hey, I wouldn't trust you to do the right thing with $16,000. So I'm going to buy the stock that I think has the long term potential to really. There's something about it. What is it about it that rankles me?
Is it a little paternalistic?
Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. Like, okay, what if you found out that he put like restrictions on the stock, like that they're not allowed to sell it? That's what would bother me.
That would bother me.
If you give me stock, but I'm allowed to trade it as I like, then that's one thing. Yeah. Okay, so odd report by Ian Rappaport that not only did John Gruden and Mike Mayock of the Raiders send home the entire scouting staff because they allegedly don't trust anybody. Okay, I kind of get that. But supposedly now, according to Ian Rappaport, they're doing it because they've got a surprise move brewing and they need absolute secrecy. This rankles me because I don't know what surprise move would demand any more secrecy than you already would have. Like, what is it that's so secret? One of our listeners just suggested on the text line that it's a trade for Clowney somehow. I don't think that's likely. I don't think they trade away Khalil Mack 1 year and then trade for Jadeveon Clowney the next.
The weird thing about the Raiders and hypothetically trading for Clowney is they don't even need to keep that a secret.
Right.
Like, yeah, they can't tamper with Clowney, but they can go into the media and say, yeah, we're interested. Listen, there are guys who are on the franchise tag, like Frank Clark in Seattle and Clowney, and we're interested in improving our football team. They don't need to keep that a secret. Here's where you need to keep things a secret. If you're the Jaguars interested in Blake Bortles or the Bears interested in Mitchell Trubisky from a couple of years ago, that's when you need to keep a secret. But the Raiders, I don't see any players on the board who they need to keep a secret with right now.
Yeah, I don't get it. Other than like it's Rappaport saying something that some clown in the Raiders organization said. I have no doubt somebody told Rappaport there, but it's almost a bad sign for the Raiders organization that somebody there thinks they're like, yeah, listen, they got something brewing, and it's so big that they got to keep it a secret. I mean, they got to send everybody home.
It sounds like a bunch of fourth graders bragging to their friends about something that's going to be a letdown.
Yeah, this is a
South Park episode.
This is the damn opening of Al Capone's vault. Worst moment of
Geraldo.
I stayed up late for that crap. I remember I was in my grandma's house watching on her 13-inch black and white TV, watching Geraldo Rivera open nothing.
What did you think was going to be in it? What did everyone think was going to be in that vault?
I don't even remember it. I probably thought like bars of gold or something. I must have only been like 7 or 8 years old.
We don't have many events on TV like that these days.
I remember David Copperfield supposedly walking through the Great Wall of China.
I remember
watching
that.
That was a big deal.
That was awesome.
Yeah. That was
we need more of that.
Well, you know what? They probably still have it. It's just that people aren't watching network television as much.
Remember when that annoying guy crossed over the Grand Canyon?
Oh.
The
other guy.
Yeah, the tightrope guy.
Oh, that's true. They did that. Yeah,
they did.
But now
that
you find out about it on Twitter.
Well, because it's
pre-recorded. It's like, you're like, oh, this is on it. Oh, that's what I missed.
The problem is it's pre-recorded and
something leaks.
The dark side of all of us is like, is he going to fall?
Yeah, but then you're like, okay, they wouldn't actually show it.
But I think for like 1 second would like to see the fall and then be like, oh my God, that guy just died. I regret having thought that thought. But I think everyone thinks that thought when they're watching something like that.
Absolutely.
That's like whenever I end up watching the Bob Kraft video. I'm going to feel bad about it, but I'm going to do it.
Which we will discuss in the 9 o'clock hour.
Interesting that you mentioned the Bob Kraft video, because another man who was in a similar situation, put himself in a similar situation, got a punch to the face. Why? A man who was watching a MMA fighter, Joyce Vieira, and a friend taking photos of Joyce, who was in a bikini, looking pretty good. He was in the bushes, essentially taking himself to Happy Town. And she saw him. She called him out on it. And she went over to confront him about it. And he basically said, oh, how about you get down with me?
Oh.
I don't think he knew that she was an... I don't think he knew that she was an MMA fighter. So she proceeded to beat him up. He ran away crying. Later, after the fact, he said, oh, I was just going to the bathroom and it was a misunderstanding.
Yeah.
There are way too many of these stories out there. There's something wrong with our gender.
Workers?
Of course there's something wrong with our gender. What are we doing?
I'm not being like smooth, sensitive 2019 guy. Of course there's something wrong with our gender.
We're super horny.
We all know it from the time we're 12 years old. There's a natural shame that comes along with being a man. And it's not even like religious trappings or anything. It's like when you do something driven by that primal drive of yours, and then immediately afterwards you're like, What is wrong with me? I've never been lurking in a bush like that, but my drive has led me to do things I'm not proud of.
Touche.
The way I wanted to take this is, like, how many people actually do this stuff in public? Like, I can understand, you know, in the confines of your own home, lighting a candle and having yourself a good old time. But when you're out in public, or, like, you're on the subway, and apparently in New York City, this happens on the subway a lot. Like, there are guys that are...
Well, there's a whole lot of crazy people in New York. But I don't think all of them are crazy.
I'm wondering...
I think by definition you're crazy.
I'm wondering if there are people that we would define as sane that decide, you know what, I'm out in the open, and let's go.
I think that's almost like... That's almost a 100% indicator that you've got mental illness.
Okay.
Right? Like, that's like, you very clearly are not confined by, like, the rules of society at that point. Yeah.
What advice would
you... Or you're, like, high, I guess.